We have announced that the title and content of our time together would be Christianity and Culture. And what we try to like to get at is to begin some thinking about what is the essence of the faith that we can carry from one culture to the other. How do we know when the faith crosses over into culture? Can we be self-critical enough to know when that happens? And it seemed to me, as I was thinking about the opening remarks I might make just to get it started, is that right in the New Testament, that issue is faced very early in the book of Acts. It was posed as a theological question, namely, does one have to become Jewish before one becomes Christian? But I think it has the same contours and textures of the question that we want to look at. And I'd like to ask the three people who are up here tonight to introduce themselves and just say a couple of words about their ministry that relates most closely to this, to Christianity and culture. They have, all of them, an experience, two of them on the, quote, overseas or foreign mission field, and Joan in Shishmaref, Alaska, which is, in our minds, I think, almost in the same place. And certainly it is a ministry to another, a people of another culture. And so whoever wants to go first, just say a word about your reflections on that as a way of introducing who you are. Most of us probably know one another, but
I think most of you know me. I'm Lee Griffin. Served in Ethiopia for a couple of years. I suppose as a psychiatrist, as a Christian, that I see some, from personal experience, some really difficult questions being posed. I think of Niebuhr's categories of Christ over culture, Christ within culture, Christ alongside of culture. I'm still somewhat baffled about where Christianity can begin and end without being infused, without selling out to idolatry, if you will, to go back in our Bible study this morning. And I suppose that for me, in looking at cross-cultural ministry, the image that comes to my mind is Teve and Fiddler on the Roof. And how much can you bend without breaking? Here Teve, whose theme song was Tradition, who certainly was anchored in a particular cultural tradition, and yet as his daughters came along and exploded his musts, and he was able to flex and say, but on the other hand, it was only at the point where his daughter rescinded the faith that he was not able to say, on the other hand. He said, if I bend any further, I will break. And I wonder often how adept, how wise, how sensitive we are in discerning those points. I see the picture of a deeply rooted tree with a rather narrow, supple trunk and with willowy branches, and that I like to think of us as Christians as being a tree like that, that can blow in the wind and have our branches brushed and pushed back and forth in many directions and be supple enough to go with the flow. And yet at a certain point, we too then must, and hopefully that can be at the foot of the cross, say, but on the other hand, in this case, there is no other hand. I find so often that the bending, which I thought I couldn't do, I could, and that there was still nurturance in the root system and that everything held together well. But I pose that as a question for myself, is where is Teve's final response?
Thank you.
I'm Bill Rice, and the issues of the relationship of our faith to our culture have been active in my mind since I spent a year of my college experience in Beirut, Lebanon, but were more formed, I think, in 5 years of work in Indonesia with the United Methodist Church, and perhaps even came even more to home returning to the United States, where the question of the relationship of our faith to this culture was more perplexing than the question of the relationship of the faith to the Indonesian culture. And one thing that I would kind of like to toss out, and perhaps we want to explore, is the question of whether there is any understanding of our faith apart from the cultural context. The disciples learned the faith in the context of their Jewish traditions and in the context of their experience of a real man in a very concrete and specific cultural event. And we all learned our faith in a cultural context. And I suspect that the relationship of the faith to a culture isn't so much one of being able to abstract the faith in its purity and see where it connects, but rather discover the activity of the Spirit and of the Christ within a cultural context. So we can play with that, those ideas.
I'm Joan Jesperson. My work is with Nupiat people in Alaska. And I'm confused. And some of that comes from the confusion that exists in the situation where I am, precisely on the point that's under discussion. I think any of us who have lived outside the United States for a month or two or more find that when you go out, that's when you find out what it means to be an American. It's not, and it's something that's almost difficult to convey back. Well, my experience outside the United States was in Jamaica in the Peace Corps, and I found out what it was to be an American and to be upper class. When I go in the situation where I am now, I encounter a culture that isn't very strong, that's endured a lot of culture shock, and the people themselves are uncertain as to how much of the technological culture, which is 20th century America, how much of that culture they can appropriate and still remain Eskimo. Culture is never a static thing. The values and whatever that make up our culture never remain still. We're always in the process of change and of evolution. And the problem, I think, that confronts us is it going to be something that we think about doing, or are we just going to let it happen to us?
Okay. It's your forum. What do you think about? What do you wonder about?
I'm kind of with Bill here, and the problem is communicating the faith in our own culture of two people who may or may not have been raised Christian and who have been educated, who have used the logic that they received in that education, who have thought it through thoroughly and have come to the conclusion that religion in general is 6 feet of crap. How do I crawl through that and get past that wall?
We got any experts here?
Chuck, you want to take that on us?
It's like the statement of, I think it was Bertrand Russell, but I'm not sure, that he said that every church should have a sign on top of it that says, important if true.
Yes.
I guess in response to your question, one of the most damaging witnesses that I find in testifying to a culture is the witness that asks from that behind that 6 feet of crap statement, if you really believe what you say you believe, why do you live the way you do? If Jesus Christ is actually who you say he is and you believe that, why do you live the way you do? And I guess after all the words are spoken, as Paul says, that the faith is really a matter of power and a demonstration of the Spirit. It isn't a matter of lofty words of wisdom. And it seems to me in a very wordy culture, in a very wordy world, that we spend much of our time talking about it. And I think that is very damaging as far as its persuasiveness and modeling to a non-believer.
You're saying that the example is more important than the message?
Yes.
Okay.
Bill, did you want to comment?
No.
The example, I would rather maybe say the example is the message.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Away and down.
To have the example be the message is saying the message, saying something to the particular culture, and so in effect saying that Christianity must be to some extent then set against the culture, and so set up in opposition to. Is the basic question to what extent Christianity embraces the culture, or to what extent Christianity sets itself up as something, as an alternative to the culture?
Right. I think you posed the question. Will the mic pick up that, or should we restate that?
We've got other mics
over there. Okay, fine. I think that's a very germane question. Oh. Okay.
Right.
Great. The question being, to what extent is, by definition, the Christian faith juxtaposed, set over against the culture? We've had answers from all sorts, and I murdered those categories. I think when I was trying to remember Niebuhr's categories, Christ over culture, Christ against culture, Christ within culture. The 4th and 5th century desert mothers and fathers that I've mentioned before, and in the last week at least, maybe since then, because I'm fascinated by their witness, were convinced that all you had to do was go with the cultural flow to go over the falls. In other words, to be damned, to take the broad road to destruction, if you will. That their whole thesis was that you had to establish an incredibly strong verticality, in other words, relationship with God and Jesus Christ, to come back and be able to risk and brave the culture and be of horizontal good. Otherwise, as the illustration now in use and is the way of the heart, was that you'd go over the falls together singing hymns in harmony, but you'd still go over the falls. That your horizontality might be very serendipitous, but it wouldn't be effectual as far as redemptive influence. And so their idea was that if you're going to come back and be horizontally, in other words, useful to your fellow human beings within a cultural context, you had to be tremendously strongly embastioned in a vertical relationship with God. And I guess I haven't been able to discount that one.
John?
Yeah, and the problem then becomes that the reaction is, okay, if that's the way culture does it, then we'll do the opposite, and we allow culture to determine what we do, but we just do the opposite. Instead of acting, we react.
Instead of doing the opposite, could we, just as a hypothetical thing, try to make Christianity acultural? Not opposed to any cultures, but just not directly involved with any either.
Bill, do you want
to? Yeah, I want to take you all on. First of all, responding to Lee, I think I probably don't have as much of a fear of culture as you're expressing here. And it's probably because of a differences in our own experiences. And one thing that keeps coming to my mind is I don't see how the verticality that you speak of, the vertical relationship with God, is established apart from the symbolism, the meanings, the stories that are part of the faith, which are a product of experiences within a whole cultural transformation. In other words, taking the Spirit seriously, the Spirit is active within this concrete, physical, political, economic, social world in which we live. And it's those events in the history of our people which are the formative events, the stories, if we'll pick up on Charlie's class, the stories which become the medium of our understanding the faith and of our receiving the Spirit. Now that also means, if I can respond to you, is that I'm not sure that there's any way we can even talk about our faith apart from a culture. That is, I believe it was Bultmann who made an effort through demythologizing, and I'm fairly weak on this, so you theologians straighten me out. But my vague understanding was that Bultmann's effort was to demythologize the faith, that is, to be able to state what the essence of Christianity is without it being bound to the values, the symbols, the meanings, the stories, the parallels, the parables, and the mythical belief framework of the Bible. And I think that's probably a failure, because you end up with a theoretical, abstract, philosophical statement that doesn't have any speaking power. So I'm back in the dilemma that I think our faith is solidly embedded in culture, and we've got to work out of the mess from there.
See, I disagree with you, Bill. I don't think the faith is embedded in culture. I think the faith is interactive in culture. I don't believe that God speaks only through culture. I believe that God speaks beyond culture and two persons outside of culture. So the cultural milieu, I do not believe, has to be a determinant of one's faith. It certainly will shape the expression of and the life of, but I disagree that it has to be mediated through culture, as you're describing.
Okay, I think that there are two, I would make a separation here. The faith isn't derived from the culture.
No, I didn't hear
you say
that.
We take the Spirit and God's activity and Christ's activity seriously. Mm-hmm. But the activity is perceived through the medium of the stuff in which we live. That is, I guess what I'm saying is I'm not a mystic.
Mm-hmm. And I am.
Yeah. No, that's right. God bless our differences.
Yes, God bless our differences. No, that's right.
Okay, I'll recognize first John and then back here and then to Dan. So you had your hand up before.
I had my hand up. Yeah. I had my hand up before Bill started to speak.
Yeah, can I say one thing? One of the things in the nature of a forum is we don't have to follow what went before. If there's something we need to say, say it. And hopefully we'll get some exchange up here, but we want some more back there. So go ahead.
Well, the other night, listening to Bill's, he seemed to bring out that was it Namundsen, that the fellow that went into Sumatra, seemed to use the best of culture, best of their culture, to bring upon Christianity. It seemed to me that seemed to be the remark the ones he got across to me, is that he didn't go in there with the idea of changing, except their the fact that Jesus was Lord. But he used all of their culture, or the better parts of it, to bring that about, including their workers. At least that's what I got out of Bill's. Now, if it's wrong, why? Please correct me.
That's certainly the direction in which he was moving compared with the other missionaries of his day. And the exact extent to which he did this and the way in which, precisely how he utilized existing meanings and the social institutions we don't have a great deal of information on, but that certainly is the thrust and the direction that he was moving.
But from his results, it seemed that yes. he must have been a very successful one.
Yes.
What I have more or less seen with friends and acquaintances when I travel in various countries and here back at home is the crisis of Western Christianity, which is maybe not the exact words I want to use, but I see friends, both Egyptians and Jews, who are very deeply rooted in either Judaism or being a Muslim within their country. They have a root, and I hear this cultural root. When I come back home and I talk to fellow Lutherans or Catholic friends, there's a drift. In other words, I think Western religion is so cross-cultural oriented that there are no roots. You can be a Presbyterian in any country, a Lutheran in any country. And there lies the crisis for probably myself and friends of mine. There are no cultural roots. You can be a German Lutheran if your roots go that far back in your family or that far back in the Midwest perhaps. But generally, there's that crisis, and I hear both of you speaking to the same thing. But in Seattle or in Holden Village, with Western religion, I feel this, I hear this somewhat for myself, and I certainly see it around me, a lack of direction and roots, no matter what your faith is, but if it is Christianity.
Is that something similar to the confusion you were articulating, Joan? Can you be helpful to him at that point? Or does it touch? Or?
I seem to be hearing that kind of confusion, yeah, mm-hmm. that he's articulating. One of the things that happened when the missionaries went to the Eskimos or to the native peoples in Alaska was that the native dancing stopped. As near as I can tell, there were no Lutheran missionaries involved in this, but the native people in my town picked up on it outside of the Lutheran influence. It was bad to dance, and it was bad to do those kinds of dances. Some of those songs invoked evil demons. Right now, they don't do any dance. There's one man left in my village that can sing and dance, that knows the old song. And he's starting to teach his grandson. So, I think you're rooted, the lack of rootedness and confusion exists in our culture, not necessarily in our faith. And maybe I'm agreeing with Bill at that point, that somehow our faith must be rooted in our culture because we speak a language and we have to communicate in that. And yet I'm with Lee that perhaps in fact it is our faith that builds our culture, and that when our culture gets out of whack, it's because our faith, you know, we're expressing heresies or whatever, if you want.
Daniel?
Yeah, it's related to what is both a fuzziness and also some negative feelings I have as a Christian about our culture. And I'm thinking if our culture has a story, it's probably the story of work hard, get ahead, and make money and be successful. That's kind of our myth. And then I think of our, like, people in congregations I've served, that you do something at church, but then your culture is most evident at times like Easter and Christmas. Like for children growing up, Easter egg hunting or whatever that means is much more important than what happens at church. Christmas, Santa Claus, and the whole story of Santa Claus is much closer to people's lives, even church people. And in other words, those are the cultural kind of stories around which our society seems to build life and build values. And, you know, I try to figure out how I fit into this, that how, you know, how do you ever relate the faith to this culture? And I find myself moving more and more to finding my culture in the early church or in the counterculture people throughout the history of our faith, that I find the symbols with them, so I end up feeling very counterculture. And I'm just wondering, is there any other position? Are the symbols of our society so far from the Christian faith that in order to be faithful, is there a point as a church we just have to say no? You know, and if you really want to get in trouble as a preacher, say something about Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. You know, because that is a deep story in the lives of people. And I think it's very controversial because it is so deep.
Mary, do you want to respond to that?
Well, I was just going to say, I realize how different our roots are from the Jewish people because of the culture and everything. But I guess I don't really have any trouble with it. I guess I'm glad that my faith is not dependent upon.
Okay.
And yet,
Mary?
You know, the Gospel of Matthew, or what we call the Gospel of Matthew, that was the very problem in that early church, was that they had lost, they'd been waiting around for Christ to come back, and they were getting despondent and frustrated. And so the writer started out that book just like the writer of Chronicles, and he gave them a sense of their rootedness and perspective within that culture by giving them the genealogy. There's a different kind of genius. And I think we do lose sight of that. I think there is something to that rootedness.
Can I respond to that?
Respond in.
It seems to me that there would be a tendency to think that if we try to see a close relationship between the activity of Christ in the world and our culture, that we might suspect that means that what is happening in the culture, the changes that are occurring in our symbols and our meanings and our stories and so on, are of God. And that certainly, I think, is not what I would want to suggest. I think that it is no less radical to say that the Spirit, it transforms us as a community through events within our society than it is to say that He transforms us by direct intervention from above without any cultural milieu. And I think that we can see this in many of the statements of Jesus where He would say, "You have heard it said of old, if a man if a man commits murder, he shall be punished, shall die. But I say to you, if he hates, he has committed murder and shall die." The symbol is here. The aspect of culture that's embedded there is the law and is the concept of murder. And what happened was Jesus radically changed that concept using the same symbol. As related to what we were saying this morning, it was the same symbol of murder, powerful symbol, and He completely changed the meaning of murder. Murder now becomes an action of the heart, not merely an action of the body. So I think that we can say, at least I can say, that the action of Christ is mediated through culture, without saying that puts a stamp of approval on what's happening. It certainly doesn't put a stamp of approval on the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus and so on and so forth.
Yeah, it seems to me, Bill, that that's just the dilemma right in there. How do we then assume the posture of pilgrims and sojourners in the world, as Paul talks about in Hebrews? How are we going to take seriously the admonition to be in the world, which is what you're affirming, that we are in the world, whether we like it or not, and not of it? I think that's exactly what the 4th and 5th century mothers and fathers were saying, is that it's no mean trick to be in the world and not of it. Mm-hmm. And that's really all that I was saying. But it seems to me the radical redemption of Jesus Christ may not change the milieu. Sometimes it does. I mean, there are stories in which it has. But most often it changes the person's response pattern in the milieu. Psychologically, is what I'm saying, is that if there's a psychological archetype, which I was talking about in terms of our formation of who are we, if there is a collective unconscious, if there is genetic drift in response to postures of behavior in the culture, then it really does matter in terms of how we respond to that drift. In other words, the seduction of the spirit would be, all you have to do is just go with the drift. And the drift is at enmity with God. The drift is in the direction of animosity. And so the radicality, in other words, the radical cut, that seems to me the challenge that we're all trying to grapple with is this matter of responding to the Spirit of God, of being redeemed and converted, so that somehow we're consecrated in power enough that we can be in the world, in the culture, and not of it. That we can remain that light-footedness, that light-handedness in dealing with things, and somehow be in touch with power source, both horizontally and vertically, that is not running through the same mains as the culture's water.
What does that mean in day-to-day living?
That means an intentionality and connectedness. That means I go back to the picture of Jesus in Mark 1:35, where it says, and long before, in the midst of all this stuff that we talked about the other night of teaching and preaching and casting out demons and healing the sick and all that stuff, that in the morning, long before dawn, he goes out and establishes that connectedness with the Father. And for me, that only affirms that Jesus was about that which had been given to him and empowered by the Father through him to do. I mean, that's the totality of obedience, discipleship, as far as I'm concerned, is walking in that. That I don't, increasingly, I don't dare to walk or say very much horizontal. Please understand, I'm making a point. That's not true. Being a sinner saint, and that which I would not, that I do, and all that stuff. All right, give me all that space. But I still want to make the point that intentionally I do not believe that I can be about the word of being a redemptive power in the culture, of being useful as a servant of Jesus Christ, except that the intentionality of connectedness with Christ be maintained.
So the only thing that distinguishes you from a really nice, good, solid, helping person is that connectedness.
Right.
But people might not even know that connectedness.
They might not.
So then in that
hard
light,
to say what kind of a rap thing
could be with Bill is saying, in terms of you're not allowing the world to squeeze you into a small, like Romans 12. In that light, you would fit into what Bill is saying in terms of you have to operate within your culture.
Mm-hmm. Sure. That's what I was just saying.
Okay. Renee, we have a voice from the balcony, and then I'll get to Derek. Okay?
I'd like to shift the discussion a little bit, if I may, and raise some more questions about the church's position overseas, and particularly in the third world. Because I think, unfortunately, whatever our problems are with culture here, we bring a very strong and definite culture with us when we go to these countries. And that's representing white middle-class America, at the very least. It's carrying all the racism with it, presenting an image, not only through the church, of course, but part of it's an image that's already there because of the media, because of the power position that the United States has. But missionaries also carry that with them, so that from the very beginning, people look at us as the representative of this power, this wealth, everything that everybody wants. And that's something that I don't think the church has dealt enough with. And for me, that's also connected to the whole dependency thing. that most of the money flows out from the American churches to indigenous churches in the third world with not enough consideration for what that creates in terms of dependency. Not enough respect for the indigenous churches, what they need and what they can do on their own, too many strings attached, a whole lot of problems. So that's just something that I want to raise that I think we need to look at more carefully.
Do either any of the...
Wow, amen.
I don't know about independence then.
That's what Bill was talking about some last night when he was talking about the Batak. People coming over here, sending missionaries to our culture with the things they have to tell us about family cohesiveness and about family respect, respect for the aging. That there are ventures that, if they're not peculiarly Christian, at least they're ethical dimensions of morality that are healthy. Yeah, I what else to say than you've articulated a very upfront problem.
Eric?
I was wondering if when we say that we want somehow to meet the cross and that to be the criterion for what culture or where culture has its limit, could we... I mean, it seems if you talk of Christ as a transformer of culture, you soon get a new culture that's supposedly transformed, which becomes an idol very quickly again. And there it goes on in a whole vicious circle. But unless you live constantly somehow in the tension between a culture adopted, or more than adopted, fully gone into and accepted, and then relativized, then... I mean, we're talking about teeter-totters a lot this week, but unless you are really in the culture, it's hard to see how the gospel is incarnated. But at the same time, if you stay in a culture and put it up on a pedestal and don't relativize it and see it, at, you know, for the relative values that it does embody, then also the gospel is not going to come through. I don't, in everyday life, that might mean to be fully in a culture. Often the church doesn't, I think, get into a culture too deeply. Sits on the edge, sits above, and then reacts against it without fully having become embodied in it. I wonder if the gospel has to become fully embodied in it in order to criticize it, in order to transcend it. Is that, I know it's very...
Gee, are you talking about overseas? Are you talking about South Africa, Derek? I mean, I don't see that there's been any reluctance for the Christian church in the United States, for the most part, to be totally immersed in the culture and the value systems of the culture.
Yeah, well, I had in mind more than... I did have in mind something from South Africa as part of it. Say, for example, you take... very often the missionaries didn't see that to be in the culture, you also participated in an ideology. And so they pretended that Christianity was neutral, or that their Christianity was neutral ideologically. Now we can say, all right, no ideology is equal to the gospel, no ideology perfectly expresses it, but at the same time, it can't be expressed outside of an ideology. So to go in fully committed and part of it, you know, committed to living out an ideology, all the time knowing that it is not going to bring in the kingdom, seems to be at least a first necessary step. Rather than sitting on the edge and paying lip service to some sort of culture.
I think part of our difficulty with this whole thing is that culture is a big abstract concept. It involves many, many different things. Rene was addressing a sociological phenomenon of mission. Regardless of what the missionaries ever said or did, there were things happening by virtue of their presence. And I think the same thing occurs here, Derek. Part of that difficulty may be attitudes on the part of those who consider themselves involved in mission. The sending churches certainly consider that their missionaries are going out and preaching the gospel and doing a variety of other things which are demonstrative of making the gospel manifest. A number of missionaries, however, once they're on the field usually and they've attempted to do just that and find that they don't know what they're doing and they're wet behind the ears, some of them have the sensitivity to say, okay, let me discover here, let me learn right here. Discover not only how to eat with chopsticks or how to eat with my hand, but also discover where Christ is active here. What's happening? Where is the Spirit? And more often than not, there are national Christians who become models for the missionary of what it means to be responding to Christ in that context. So the missionary is the discoverer of the activity of the Spirit within this culture which is foreign to him, and can in some ways, being an outsider in the position of discoverer, begin to illuminate for some of the people what is happening in their own midst. More powerfully, he's able to illuminate to his own people on return some of the things he's discovered. But I think part of the response to that, you know, being able to carry the gospel in this wineskin of culture from one to another, has to do with an attitude where we see not that we are carrying the precious, what's Paul's word, the treasure. Yeah. But we are ready to discover the treasure.
I try again just in this culture. In the field of psychology, a lot of Christians sort of woke up in the 60s maybe to the fact that psychologists and human scientists had something to offer to theology. And then perhaps we might say boarded totalist bolus and became at worst psychologist. I mean, I wonder though if Christians had been at the forefront of those discoveries in human science, if they wouldn't have seen the relative value of it rather than, you know, idolizing it as an absolute. They had been thoroughly incarnated in the culture at its forefront. They wouldn't have to, you know, go two steps behind society buying into it when it's already shown its bad side.
Mm. And yet that's been our history, Derek. It isn't just recently, it's down through the ages. The church has been a responder.
I would think that we could all practice a little bit of this and making a few evangelism calls in the United States. We are already in this culture. And you can really find out what it means to be a Christian in a culture if you get out and make a few evangelism calls, because you're in most of the states in the United States, you've got about one out of two that would be, that don't know enough about the Christianity even to be called Christians. And it's a very fertile field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then to me, that's the best way to set the example, to attempt to spread Christianity in our culture, thereby setting the example for the rest. Now, I don't know, sitting in this culture, I kind of assume, or it appears to me from what little I've seen, that they... rest of the world tends to copy us to some extent. Now that's, I don't know if that's truth or not. But, you know, if we have set the example and we have at least a more outwardly practicing faithful culture here, a little more. Not, we're never going to have what should be. But do you think that would perhaps do more towards setting the example and passing it on to the other cultures of the world?
I'm not sure I follow you yet.
I'm not sure I follow me yet either.
If I'm understanding, you're talking about the conversion of en masse, in a way, the tuning up en masse of the cultural witness outside the country? I mean, the United States is certainly a political witness to the world. That's
okay.
Right? And you were saying that if we tuned up our act here and showed what? More Christian values, evidence of more Christian faith? I'm not sure. I think that's where...
I'm not sure either, but I think that would be a start and perhaps be helpful to that cause.
I guess Dan put it in a pretty good way for me, that as Lutheran Christians, we attest that we're sinner saints, and so we're always, you know, always off tune there. But he talked about the bubble effect, that if you want to talk about light, salt, and leaven, if you want to talk about bubbles, it's all the same thing. That maybe, just maybe, the best we can hope for is to be bubbles that are oriented around a different reality in the larger cultural milieu. Now, what is that saying? It really is saying something about being against culture, within culture, different from culture, but a different reality based in the cultural milieu, which hopefully, by the grace of God, will act as salt, light, and leaven. I don't know. Dan, I'll let you speak for yourself.
We've got, excuse me, I've got somebody back here, and then Hank, and then Dan, okay?
To change things to a little bit different approach, and maybe make it a little more concrete, my feeling is that we should, as Christians, look very carefully at our entire set of values and determine which of those set of values is based in biblical Christianity and which is based on our culture and other unnecessary things. If it's not really based in Christianity and it's based in our culture, maybe we should change that value to one that is directly based in Christianity.
Hank?
I guess what I hear a variety of people saying is leading to some confusion in my mind between what I perceive as kind of a, I don't quite sure how to phrase it, a biblical culture, if you will, a living on the boundary, as Brueggemann has talked of it, that is centered on my faith, and civil religion. Civil religion being, you know, the outward practice of my religion as culture, as in practiced in this country in a variety of ways. There's not one civil religion in this country. The civil religion that is practiced by me is a different form of civil religion than is practiced by the Eskimos where we live, or even by my own parents. I think it's wonderful. I think we have to continually examine our values and see if they are in fact biblical. I do not think our culture can ever do so. I don't think our culture dare do so. I don't think we dare let our culture do so. We always have to be outside of the culture criticizing the culture. I don't think we can ever ask for America to reform itself. And we have to stand outside and tell America, hey, get your act together. And continually stand out there, no matter what they do, and say, get your act together.
If they get their act together?
Mm-hmm. I disagree with that.
I'm saying that they cannot possibly ever get their act together by the very nature of society.
Okay,
I believe that. Okay, any of you want to respond? Dan, and then we'll go over now. Dan?
I just thought of a way, you know, that I think I was taught to affirm culture, and I had a seminary professor that taught us how to look at movies and to see an authentic movie and see how the gospel is happening. And this professor made us very wary of Christian film producers and Christian artists that hardly ever really say the gospel, but taught us to go to the culture. And like Bill said, to find the gospel, find the Christ event, find the Christ. You know, just as an example, I don't know where I've ever found a more powerful proclamation of the gospel, at least for myself, than like in The Pawnbroker, very old movie, or even Cool Hand Luke had a crucifixion. Here is a culture where the Spirit is working, and how do we embrace that and at the same time remain counterculture?
Okay.
Well, speaking as Lutheran Christian, I think that if we want to be missionaries, we should study Mother Teresa and the things that she's doing in India. There are two prime examples of what missions and missionaries can do to cultures. The Hawaiian Islands is a fine example of one of the worst things that missionaries can do to a culture. They brought Christianity and wound up owning the islands. And perhaps one of the finest examples of what Christianity can do without interrupting and totally corrupting a culture is what they did with the Bata people that Bill was talking about. And I think this is what we have to do. We can bring Christianity to a nation without corrupting them with our Western ideas. In too many instances, the missionaries are the forerunners of a capitalist army running through to take over the country that they are supposedly preaching the gospel to. They're not preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ for the purpose of bringing it to the people, but for the purpose of subverting them into a capitalist and exploited culture.
Could you continue a little more on Mother Teresa? Why is Mother Teresa's...
No, sorry, go ahead and finish. We'll just go to Nancy after this.
Why is Mother Teresa's witness so powerful?
Because she only brings Jesus Christ to and the love of God to the people. She is not trying to wind up owning India. She's bringing Jesus Christ to them. She doesn't want their country. That's all.
Nancy.
Well, it just seems confusing that we live in a society where we're a melting pot culture, and we're trying to go into cultures where their reflections and growth in religion have stemmed from what they've observed in the awesomeness of nature and creation. And like expressed in the Greek myth, the Roman myth, legends, just how gods have been in control. And Jesus came as a human physical form that our human minds could somehow grasp. And the same way he had to speak in parables, in things that we, concrete things that we could express. So by our missionaries coming with a culture that's so young in cultural ideas into ones that are so old and so well established that we can't criticize some of their religion forms, that we have to draw the elements of the spirits that have been within them, because that's how their religions developed, the spirits within them in what they observed. We have to have religion.
Okay, we're down to almost stopping time. Is there anybody that has a question or comment that simply can't be contained? Someone that hasn't had a chance to say anything.
On the balcony.
There, in the question of evangelism, which is really kind of what's being addressed, Paul, I think, sets the example in the tone when he goes to the Greeks and he says, "I resolved to know nothing but Christ crucified." But I think that's what you started with, was the sense of you leave the cultural baggage and you don't tell either the culture you're going into or your own culture to get their act together. But you know just the mercy, the love of Christ crucified, the person, the flesh, the one message. Then, after that, there are a lot of problems that arise of how to live day to day. But the message, the evangelism, I think you get the answer to this question really from Paul's struggle with that problem question. He could have approached it in any number of ways, but he says to not get himself tied up in the complexities of their culture, his knowledge, his own wisdom, but to just to destroy that aspect of himself, to focus on the one truth that he had, I think perhaps might help. At least that's the starting point.
Okay, do each of you want to take a minute to, not to settle it, I am.
Some things have come up for me to respond to the gentleman in the back who mentioned something about using only Christian values or biblical values. I guess the problem that I see there, that to my mind that's exactly what Moral Majority has done, and I don't agree with them. So who's going to decide which values are Christian and when we have enough of them? I perceive that to be a problem. And I guess to respond in the balcony there for the last comment was, it seems to me that in the verse you quoted, Paul is speaking about what he will know as over against the knowledge of all the other evangelists that are parading through the town at that point. But that when Paul speaks of evangelism, he says, to the Jew, I will be a Jew, and to the Greeks, I will be a Greek.
And he uses and the culture.
And he uses the culture.
I would pick up on that same thing. To know only Christ crucified is to know him in the particularity and the concreteness of events, as Nancy was pointing out. So we would say, we know Christ crucified. Can we in our hearts identify that right here in our midst at Holden Village? And if we can, then we know Christ crucified. If we can only identify him theoretically in our minds or somehow in our hearts, and we cannot say, this is Christ crucified and this is the hope of the gospel right here in daily events at Holden Village, then we don't know him.
Yes, I would concur with what you're saying mostly, Bill. That's, as I say, you by being by self-definition a non-mystic, and I being by self-definition a Christian mystic, we're going to have a little different emphases. That's true. I guess where I see it in the radical redemption and renewal, the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ, that this, the essence of this has to be beyond culture. The transformation is so utterly radical, so utterly non-psychological congruent, psychologically and sociologically and anthropologically congruent, that it has to be a radicality from without. We Lutheran Christians talk about it as alien righteousness. Alien righteousness. That means we ain't got it within ourselves. And on the other hand, the admonition that if you don't love your brother who you do see, how you gonna love God who you don't? Well, somewhere twixt and tween between, in the midst of that antimony, probably, certainly a paradox, I guess we're trying to work out our salvation.
Well, I get the last word, and all I'm going to say is I hope that unsettles it for you. I think if you go out of here with as many questions or one more than you came in with, we've had a good forum. So have a good evening, and Compline will come in just a few moments.